Here's the next text. But the lovely gopis continued to follow him. Their throats choked with tears, they could no longer sing. Nor could they see through the streams of tears, and their feet stumbled, unable from shyness and fear to do or say anything. They were drowning in a great ocean of remediless sorrow. Commentary. As expressed by the word tu, meaning however, the gopis' mood is even more exalted than Mother Yashoda's. In fact, being his most beloved devotees, the gopis are endowed with all excellent qualities. In texts, these two texts above, they describe how they were overwhelmed by various emotions. Their naturally endowed shyness, which decorated their personalities most of the time. Fear of what their elders were thinking when they left the village without permission, and what the consequences might be. In the village, they could counteract the pain of separation from Krishna by embracing and kissing him. But now that he was going away for the day, there was nothing they could do. They lacked the strength even to ask, how can we live like this? Well, not one well-known psychological principle is Nivedya Dukam Sukino Bhavanti. Unhappy people can regain their peace of mind by revealing the cause of their distress. Interesting psychological principle. In this case, however, the gopis could not even express themselves. And so, they remained adrift in the vast ocean of their misery. Continuing. Having stolen the hearts and the eyes of these young gopis, who had come quite far from the cowherd village, Krishna, with some endeavor, stopped them. And as they looked at him, he repeatedly asked them to turn back. Krishna was anxious, and so to stop them, he assured them again and again, through a trusted messenger, and by his own gestures. He craned his neck to glance at them with love, made signals with his eyebrows, and did other things. They stopped in front of his mother and stood, shy and afraid, motionless just like her. Commentary. The boys were now approaching the dense forest, an unsafe place for young girls. They had to be sent back. By sending Krishna, this is editing problem. By sending signals, I think, Krishna managed to convince them from going any further by words sent through a boy acting as a messenger, and by Krishna's own gestures, like knitting his eyebrows, shaking his head, and biting the tip of his tongue. The gopis then joined Mother Yashoda on the same hill where they stood like pictures and cried profusely, just like her. Next comes Nanda. The king of the cowherds naturally loved Krishna very much, but upon seeing his wife's concern, he was enslaved by excessive affection. Even though Nanda Maharaj had gone with Krishna for a great distance, and even though the elder cowherds had also followed along, Nanda Maharaj was unable to turn back. Having seen the great burden of love all the people of Braja bore for his son. Commentary. As king of the cowherd community, it was normal for Nanda to be surrounded by priests, advisors, and other Brajavasis. And so, along with Nanda, other leaders of the community, including his elder brother, Upananda, were also following Krishna, but even out of consideration for their comfort, Nanda was unable to turn back. Continuing, even though Nanda was delighted to see many auspicious omens and see the animals and other creatures all very happy, still he was distraught over being separated from his son. Commentary, the animals were displaying auspicious symptoms. Their faces and bodies were full and were circling Nanda clockwise. The deer, birds, and other forest creatures were happy because the night, which is the time for their being separated from Krishna, had passed, and now it was time for Krishna to join them in the forest. Again and again, Nanda embraced his son and his elder and his son's elder brother, both separately and together. He smelled their heads and shed tears in the pain of great love for them. Then, same thing he did with Mother Jasoda. His son bowed down to him, reminded him of the many duties he had to perform, and sent him home. Nanda turned back and stood motionless, his gaze fixed on Krishna. Commentary. Krishna convinced his father that he was needed at home to protect the villagers from becoming too wretched over Krishna's absence. Also, in the afternoon, Nanda would have to organize the decorating of the village for his son's return. Translation. When Nanda's two sons had gone far enough into the forest that he could no longer see them or hear any sound from them, he finally turned back toward the cowherd village. Commentary. For a while, even after the boys and their animals were too far away to be seen, some sounds could be heard, like cows mooing and horns being blown. But when even these sounds were inaudible, Nanda finally went home. After engaging servants as messengers to bring news of Krishna, Nanda consoled his wife and the gopis and took them back to their homes. Singing of Krishna's pastimes, the gopis entered the village where they spent the day absorbed in thoughts of his company. And this will be our last... to read two more. The gopis, commentary. The gopis are Krishna's greatest devotees, dedicated to him even more intensely than Sri Nanda and the other elder cowherd men and women. The gopis spent the entire day fully absorbed in the Sankirtan of singing about the Rasa dance and other pastimes they had shared with him. They remembered how they enjoyed these pastimes and anticipated having more pastimes with him in the near future. Some of the songs of the gopis are recorded in the 10th canto, 35th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. So here's one. The gopis sang. When Mukunda vibrates the flute he has placed to his lips, this is 10th canto, chapter 35. Stopping its holes with his tender fingers, he rests his left cheek on his left arm and makes his eyebrows dance. At that time, the demigoddesses traveling in the sky with their husbands, the siddhas, become amazed. As those ladies listen, they are embarrassed to find their minds yielding to the pursuit of lusty desires, and in their distress, they are unaware that the belts of their garments are loosening. So the final verse here, Sri Sarup is explaining to his student, the Mathura Brahman, only a person with infinite capacity can describe these dealings in full detail, but why would an intelligent person
be
everything about Krishna's day, from the moment his mother wakes him to the time he returns home in the evening. But Sarup says that only someone equal to Ananta Shesh could satisfy such a demand. The Brahmana might counter with the words, Maya Balena Bhavatapi Nugu Yamanam Pashyati Kechit. Some people can see what you keep hidden by your own power of illusion. You with a capital Y. Some people can see what you, Krishna, keep hidden by your own power of illusion. And he might insist that Sri Sarup, being indeed a great devotee of the Lord, is capable of doing anything. But Sarup says, but I cannot do this because these pastimes are infinite. Then the Mathura Brahmana might counter, please describe at least some part of them in detail. The Brahmana might persist. No, Sarup would find the answer, would finally answer. An intelligent person should not speak what will create unhappiness for the entire world. If he does so, he is not intelligent. Indeed, even the son of Vatarayana Vyas did not speak elaborately in Srimad Bhagavatam on these topics of the Vrajavasis daily separating from Krishna. So now the scene moves into the forest of Vrindavan, and it describes what Krishna is feeling from his side. Continue tomorrow. Very nice to hear while we're here in Vrindavan. Going to the places of Krishna's pastimes. Tomorrow we'll be going to Varsana, and he will hear some very, very, very wonderful pastimes that take place between Radha and Krishna there. It's almost like being in another world, coming to Vrindavan. That's a nice world. So any discussion on what we read or whatever other things somebody might want to bring up for discussion? Yeah. Your voice is not loud enough to counteract that noise. I got some of it, but I didn't get all of it.
In hearing this topic, it reminds me of the love and affection that I receive from my spiritual authority.
Okay.
So, is it the right understanding that I get some glimpse of the true love which I'm receiving? So, I'm thinking that one is how much Krishna is with love.
That's the idea. The loving exchanges that are there between what we're hearing is incomparable. The intensity of loving exchanges. So, we can, something that we can experience that resembles that is the spiritual loving relationships that we have with devotees. But our present consciousness is far from the same that these devotees have. Their love for Krishna is so great, and the object of love is so perfect in reciprocating that love. It's just anyway, as he's saying, it's hard to describe. But this, these things give us some hint of those things. Hint. Not the full, but hint. Yeah.
Because in the scriptures, anywhere reveals the relationship between, between the Gopas, between Sri Rama and Madhu Mandala, and between the Gopis, how they're related to each other.
Yeah, they're each of them has particular personalities, and that's at least from the reading and hearing that I've taken part in. The first thing that becomes a little clear is that they have very distinct personalities. And then, as you're pointing out, another thing that becomes clear is that they interact in unique ways. But they're not uniform, unique ways. They're very variegated ways in which they interact. Like this Madhav Mahotsav discloses some things where Lalita, Vishakha, is contrasting her nature with Lalita's nature. And if the subject is surrounding this apparent cheating that Krishna has done, that he's given his promise to Champakalata that he will install her at the king of Vrindavan when he's already done so with Radha. So how they respond is different. And Lalita says, and Vishakha says that Lalita is far more clever and uncompromising in her defending the mood and the honor of Radha. But I am, in comparison to her, I am more soft-hearted. So I'm ready to hear what you have to say. Why have you done this? He's sharp, but why have you done this? And then the other gopis, when before Vishakha goes, they make certain comments. Lalita says, you know, this is like betrayal of Radha, that Vishakha's going to even go and talk to that wretched person, Krishna. But before she goes, let it be known, basically, over my dead body. And she makes a very, very heavy statement, which is then later on repeated to Krishna. So it's just, you know, so there's interplay of their personalities, and they play different roles at different times, and just as the leelas are described, their personalities, and as your question is, their interactions based on those personalities becomes more apparent. Difficult to have lengthy discussions on these kinds of very elevated but very, very wonderful to hear topics. All right.
I have a small question
that
what the answer was.
Was the camera on when the light is going like that? What does that mean? But you can just move the hand in front. Are you on or not?
It's on.
It's on, okay.
Mm-hmm. Since I have all these great minds that I understand, maybe you can help me out. I've always wanted to know what the personification of Mura demon stands for. What is it?
Personification of the Mura demon?
Yeah. I can't find it anywhere.
What it means?
Mura demon. Krishna's
slave. Oh, because you're Bharari? Brother of the Mura demon? There's no stands for it. No, there's no stands for it.
Personified,
there's
a personified
No. No, it's not a personification of something. The Mura demon? The Mura demon was the demon that was guarding the moat of King... What is his name?
Narakasura.
Krishna slave him. There's no symbolical something. He's a demon who was living there, and when Krishna approached the palace of Narakasura, he was okay. Another one. Krishna's qualities are what one of the things that we've heard is the beauty of Krishna. Another is his lovingness. Krishna just loves everyone, and knowing that loving quality in Krishna, others are attracted to him. His flute, which is very attractive. It steals the hearts of everyone. His glance. His glance is not just like, you know, a young boy and young girl, and they notice that the other one is glancing at them, and vice versa. And so Cupid's is not that. That's one kind of attraction. But like I was thinking about this once, I was just contemplating when, like our prayer that we sing when doing the deity, Krishna's eyes, all the senses of Krishna are interchangeable with one another. So the glance of Lord Ram was sufficient because of the Leela to boil the oceans. Or Mahavishnu sends all living entities into the Pradhan by his glance. How powerful is the glance of the Supreme Lord depending upon the particular Leela that is being enacted? When he enters Dwaraka, and the ladies are standing on the rooftop out of their shyness, Krishna simply glances at them and is as good as they're embracing him. He enters their hearts, and their hearts flutter, filled with. But it's not the boy and girl of this world glancing. It's a transcendental potency that is carried in Krishna's glance. So, and as if each one of his limbs, all of the other limbs can perform any of the same functions. The fragrance of Krishna. Anyone could sit with anyone. Here, like this It's in with the Manoharvadi,
his
cleverness. But simultaneously with that cleverness, appealing and playing upon the heartstrings of each of the devotees. And all of those together like a grand concert. It's just and it's a wonderful event. It just has variety. And every living entity situated in that realm is possessed of pure love. So when we're in the company of persons who have an enormous devotional capacity, how uplifting that is when they speak of a situation where everyone has that capacity and such an enormous degree. It's the whole thing is inconceivable. The whole of the Yogamaya potency is creating a spectacle just to perfectly enhance Krishna's happiness and engage each living entity in complementing that happiness of Krishna. And there, not there, 20 to 7.